Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Thank you for joining me today for this special edition of Talking Pictures, where we're going to format this show like Milos, or like Siskel and Ebert, and we're going to discuss the great two-time Academy Award-winning director, Milos Forman, best known for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, People vs. Larry Flint, Amadeus, a number of films, a European director who came out of the Czech New Wave, which was intertwined with the French New Wave and the European New Wave of the late 70s. And basically, he was someone who burst on the scene and made incredible changes to American cinema. He was born in Communist Czech Republic, so he had a different viewpoint on things. And he was able to really give a look at humanity that was hard to obtain just by being an American. And that is what Milos Forman gave us, was another way of looking at ourselves as people. And that was his great contribution. Some directors, are known for their female characters like Woody Allen. Some are known for their gangster movies or their rough edged characters, like Martin Scorsese's films. Milos Forman was pure humanity. His characters were always kind of outsiders. Of course, he made The People vs. Larry Flint, and he made... hold on one sec. We have our caller coming in. And Jim, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, Paul. Right away.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us. I was just saying how today we are going to be discussing the incomparable... wonderful, spectacular, superb, not enough adjectives that can describe what a wonderful filmmaker, Mr. Milos Forman. I've already let people know that he's from the Communist Czech Republic and came into film in the mid-60s, early 70s, at a time when American film was changing and their ideals. And before I kind of just mentioned a few of his Czech Republic films, I wanted you to start out with the point that you wanted to make about his film Hair, that, again, I'm going to pull up the exact year here while Jim tells us. Jim, if you could use Hair to explain what you feel about Milos Forman.
Okay, well, for me, it was... I lived in San Francisco at the time. I saw the movie, and it was with a fairly sophisticated audience. And what really surprised me, excuse me, was at the end of the movie, everyone spontaneously stood up and applauded. I had never seen that, you know, having gone to a movie and have a audience respond like that. He managed to take something that had been done on stage, which I think he's done before, and present it in such a way, using our idiom, You know, he used Twyla Tharp for the dance numbers. He presented a acid trip, of all things, in such a way that he actually nailed it. I'd seen a lot of movies where people tried to, you know, they'd put a doily that you could look through and see what the action was, and that was supposed to be what, you know, the acid trip that was going on. He got the I don't know how to put it, the soul of that experience that, you know, a lot of people at that time, and I think some still to this day, experienced or are experiencing. And I was enthralled. It's one of my favorite movies. I have a limited number that I just hold on to. And that's one of the movies that I watch over and over again. And
well,
appreciate
it. That's the sign of a great film. I mean, there's few films that you will watch over and over, or it isn't out of revisiting it because you haven't seen it for 20 years. I didn't introduce you. I had said that you're one of the co-producers of this podcast, but that based on your age, you're basically in your fifth decade of watching movies, and you come to this as that I say that you and I have made some short films together, and we've had countless hours discussing film. I only say that so you see today that we wanted to make this episode. We're both very much inspired by Siskel and Ebert, and Milos Forman is a great topic because as we go through this, there's going to be a few films that Jim is more of a fan of and a few that I'm more of a fan of. But what makes this director so great is that he ties strong themes and is able to really, truly stand by what he's saying. And not really caring who likes it. Now, that brings us back to that he, you know, he lost his parents in the Holocaust. He was, of course, from a communist country. When we talked about a few weeks ago, Jim and I, when you and I talked about when we had found that movie, Black Peter, that was his first movie. It was just not a good movie. We watched it about 5 years ago. We're such fans of Milos Forman that of thousands of filmmakers, the first one we want to talk about is him, and we didn't enjoy it. The film that would bring him into American cinema is The Loves of a Blonde, which got Kirk Douglas discovering him and asking him to do a movie called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, that was in 1965. Just very, very quickly, Kirk Douglas had kind of passed his real prime as an actor and was trying to become a producer. Of course, Burt Lancaster had become a producer in the late 50s. Long story short, he gave the book to his son, Michael Douglas, and Michael Douglas and Saul Zant set off to make One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. By pure coincidence, from Milos Forman's own words, Michael Douglas sent the book to Milos Forman and said, "We think you're the guy to make this." So, with father and son never talking, that shows you another power of Milos Forman's films. That for two producers to not even talk, to think the same guy should do this. Now, Cuckoo's Nest, Jim, I'd like to start off with you discussing this because Cuckoo's Nest is one of those films where, I mean, I know 17, 16, 15-year-olds that have seen it. I think I saw it when I was that young. But how was that movie, or is there something that stands out for you with that movie that you saw it at the time?
Okay, well, you know, one of the things that he really landed on and with in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was that the underdog, the fact of being caged, which he... although not actually, you know, put in Auschwitz or something like that, but creatively over his career in Czechoslovakia, was up against some of that. He experienced it. And it was sort of like a tone poem to the fact that in our culture, that's alive. We're not always aware of it, but he pointed it up in that movie and that need, that drive to break out of that cage. It's just, you know, like, whoa, hey, guy, you know, it's like awesome.
Well, and that movie, of course, is, you know, resonates with generation after generation because it was, you know, on the trivia level, which, of course, on this show, we always like to give out, hand out some trivia, is not since Frank Capra's It Happened One Night had a film won Best Actor, Actress, Screenplay, Director, and Picture. So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, of course, also, I had said earlier, Jim, when we were doing that test episode, but now here in this live episode, of course, it's instantly seen as a Jack Nicholson vehicle. And of course, when we put it in the context of we had had Easy Rider and Five Easy Pieces and The Last Detail and Chinatown, I think it was Jack's like fifth Oscar nomination in a row. So it was one of those like, you know, he's Jack Nicholson, and now it's kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio is becoming the Jack Nicholson of our time. Of it's like, what does he have to do to get an Oscar? So Cuckoo's Nest was already kind of set up to be this Nicholson vehicle. But if you really watch it, and Milos Forman in an interview that I saw a couple months ago said, he specifically wanted unknown actors. Now, if you go back and watch that film, Danny DeVito is one of the patients. Chris Lloyd, Doc Brown in the Back to the Future movies. Vince Scolari, who's in many of Milos Forman movies. They're known now, but he said he didn't want anyone to be known because he said the only way we're going to be able to bring people into this uncomfortable room of therapy and a psych ward is by bringing someone that we're totally comfortable with, which is Jack Nicholson. So he was using this reverse psychology to get a movie made, and the movie, this isn't spoiling it, because really if you haven't seen it by now, then sorry if this spoils it for you, but the movie had this theme of the guy who's the least crazy is the one that they lock up, and when they have, I mean, that scene for me, when Nicholson learns that all those other guys that are cuckoo and all the you know, empathy in the world for anybody with mental problems, we're not knocking that, that he's the most sane one and he's the one who's forced to be there, was another just great kind of Milos Forman subversive, you know, right hook. I think, like you were saying, he has this way with his films of he can just give you a great right hook and you think he threw a jab. And it's just so human. And you're just kind of like, when Nicholson comes to that moment of realizing that he's sitting next to guys that talk to themselves and they can leave, but he has to be there. It's like, wow, I get goosebumps thinking about that or what that must be like. Now, with how you mentioned Hair, that would come after Cuckoo's Nest in 1979. I find that interesting because...
Could I jump in on something about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? He was drawing, as far as I can tell, and as far as I've heard, on the fact that when he made, I think it was, I'm sorry, Loves of a Blonde?
Yeah, Loves of a Blonde, yeah.
Yeah, that film, he had only one professional, semi-professional actor in that. Everybody else were people that had never acted before. And he really appreciated the fact that they could come into it with a spontaneity, with a real feeling for what was going on, because he took away the script and they had to, like, just sort of only, well, I guess it was improvise from who they were into the character, you know, and then carrying that over out of his, you know, creative spirit into One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. you know, that's the part of the creative process. Because when he was young and going through all the changes in the Czechoslovakia, it's not his persona, his person, actually his inner core, didn't just get the dark. It got that fun in life, because there was that in him. He was capable of being, you know, many people over a period of time and getting a depth and width of experience that, just informs what he does.
I mean, yeah, that's so well put, because he's a guy very soft-spoken in interviews. This recent documentary that I saw with him, he admitted that there was one time in his movie-making career where he said he got very mad and yelled at someone in front of everyone, and he said he remembers coming back the next day and calling all the crew together and apologizing, and he said he had not done it since, and that was in the 70s. Of course, he went on to make movies. Really, one of his last most famous movies, it's hard to think it was 15 years ago, was Man on the Moon, with Jim Carrey, and then he has a couple credits here up to 2009. He's still living. He's 83 years old. He's born in February. And his name is actually, the way they would say this name with European, Jan Thomas Forman. So that's an interesting thing to just learn just now. Now, with Miloš Forman, as we've talked about, these characters of humanity, seeing the light and seeing the dark, capturing an acid trip. Now, a film of his that I'm the first one to admit I only watched because it won the 1984 Best Picture, which Cuckoo's Nest had won the Best Picture, so he's directed two Best Picture winners, is Amadeus. And I know F. Murray Abraham snagged an Oscar for that. So actors that work with him get nominated. His films are the top. He does not do it for awards. That's why I believe he's so awarded. But Amadeus, for me, I just remember it being very big, very grand, but not feeling like it was being pushed on me. And I was I was far too young to understand classical music, and I hadn't gotten into the way blues and jazz and rock and roll connect, and the way arts get passed down through generations and travel through tribes and can connect parents to grandparents. So, you know, what is your, since you got to see that at an older age and when it was new, what can you share with us about the film Amadeus?
Well, you know, I said that he had a sense of fun. And in Amadeus, that Amadeus and Solari, that light and dark, because Amadeus, through that, you know, everything he went through, he really did come across as a character, as a human being who enjoyed. He had enjoyment in him. He had an appreciation of the fact that music is one of those things that sort of transcends the rest of our life. It's not about getting to the end. It's just about the music. And that you sort of informed him. And the resentment on Solari's part that his experience, which was very deep for him, and he was good at what he did, but he couldn't get across like Amadeus did, that joy, that darkness, that the character, that was presented by Amadeus.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because as I look here, it won 8 Oscars, which puts it in with On the Waterfront. Very few films have won 8 Oscars, and it won Best Picture. F. Murray Abraham won for playing that sad character. Of course, Miloš Forman won. Art direction, costume design, sound, makeup. Tom Holt, who played Amadeus, was nominated but did not win. Like you said, it was the light and the dark. And I like that you keep bringing that up as a theme, because that is probably the most prevalent thing I feel that he can truly capture. I mean, when you're watching his films, if you're laughing at something in Cuckoo's Nest, you're laughing. If you're sad for Andy Kaufman, you're sad. You're not just kind of in between. You're not and you're not being forced or tugged, or you're just being kind of handed the meal, and the meal tastes good, and it doesn't need salt or pepper. It's just like, this is what it is. And Amadeus, thank you for that great rundown of it, because it is something I need to rewatch on Netflix. I want to let people know that I checked Netflix. Various things go up and down. Amadeus is up. There was a brief time People vs. Larry Flint was up. I've never seen Hair, Cuckoo's Nest, or Man on the Moon go up. Now, another important film that's important for so many reasons, which, again, like you said, the films that Milos Forman makes are not films where you could see Star Wars and say, you know, Steven Spielberg could have made Empire Strikes Back, or George Lucas could have made the fourth Indiana Jones, but he just produced it. Milos Forman films, no one else could make them. So the People versus Larry Flint, I do not believe an American director who grew up in a country where free speech is given, but we will not debate how it's given and taken in our country. But to grow up in a place where you didn't have it and you couldn't run with your artistic ideas like Larry Flint did, you couldn't, to endlessly have to stand by how many times you're arrested, how many times you're fined, I mean, to be shot and paralyzed, and you're still willing to get behind your ideals. That was something that I remember in high school. It came out when I was a junior. That was the first time I ever remember being very floored by a character and having no clue that, because when you're just a dumb 16-year-old teenage boy, you think founder of Penthouse, you don't think, God, this guy got shot so this magazine could be out. You just think, ha, 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 naked women and sex. So did you, lived through this evolution of the real Larry Flint? What was this experience like for you? Because you had the real and the movie.
Yeah, that exactly. I went into that with my preconceived, just general feeling for who Larry Flint was. And it was, it was negative. And what happened when I was watching it was a bit of confusion at that time for me. Because he just, like you said, he doesn't just shove it in your face. He presented what Flint was doing, what the society was doing at that time. And it was an eye-opener and a good movie. You know, his choice of actors and actresses, fun. You know, there was, again, a theme there, an appreciation of somebody who was, looked down on, but had a very, very strong core of what he was doing. He was having fun. And the society, providing something, I saw the magazine, I knew what it was, but the society, I think that I reflected at the time, had a negative judgment on him. I didn't walk out of the theater with that. It turned me upside down.
Well, right, and especially when you mentioned cast, We're talking 1996 here. The film was nominated for two Oscars. Of course, one was Woody Harrelson in his first Oscar nomination. Woody has also been nominated for The Messenger in 2009. So people forget that Woody is up there with guys like Kevin Spacey and Jack Lemmon and some of the best actors of our times that have been nominated for both acting categories. And then, of course, Milos Forman was nominated for Best Actor. Now, people love to debate when a film comes along that you know the Academy won't give it Best Picture or Best Director, but it has to nominate its merit. You had Courtney Love, who, of course, was controversial at the time because of Kurt Cobain. And then you had a young Edward Norton, who Edward Norton now is one of our, in my opinion, is one of our best actors. Just had an Oscar nomination for Birdman.
Cream of the crop. He has a feeling for them.
Yes, and it was simple. And now we're talking Edward Norton. We're putting him here in a time of, let me see here. This is right before he got his next Oscar nomination for, he got an Oscar nomination for his second movie, Primal Fear. His fourth movie that he was in was People vs. Larry Flint. Then is when he got nominated for American History X and then broke big into the world with Fight Club. And that put David Fincher on the scene and, of course, brought Brad Pitt into a whole new consciousness with us. So, yes, the cream of the crop, Edward Norton, who plays Larry Flint's lawyer, makes a huge contribution as the guy who's constantly just there to tell his client to, you know, zip it and quit wasting money. The People vs. Larry Flint, if you can find it, not a surprise as we discuss some of these Milos Forman films and as we uncover and talk about how they're miniature, without hitting you with a hammer, indictments of how our society acts. Now, my opinions are my opinions. Jim's opinions are Jim's opinions. They just represent the show. They don't represent anybody we talk about. We're not talking bad about the country we live in but the way Milos Forman is saying, hey, you guys say that you have free speech, but do you really? And that leads us into the next film that really kind of
I'm going to interrupt you again. That thing that he does with our culture, with our, you know, how we live our lives day to day, he just presented how it is not appreciated. He did that through the eyes of an outsider. You know, here is somebody that basically is looked down on by a lot of people. But what he's doing is he is living. He's an embodiment of that that willingness to go forward and say what he has to say, present what he has to present, meet that part of the American people that went out of their way to read his magazine. And he stood firm on that.
Right. And there's still that big, huge, I think it's Fairfax. It's near the Academy in the Samuel Golden Theater and near the Academy Library. You see the big, huge, 8 or 10 story Flint Publications building down by the Beverly Center in West Hollywood. And so the empire is still there. And another great thing that People vs. Larry Flint, I'm so glad that you continued this before we discussed Man on the Moon, is there was a scene that it could have just been written for the times. It might not have happened the way it did, but I know it was another great way of Milos Forman, not fictionalizing, but showing a point, was Courtney Love plays Larry Flint's girlfriend, and in the movie she gets AIDS. And Larry Flint, happens to get shot and paralyzed, so he can't have sex. So there's a subtle way where Milos Forman never brings up Larry Flint probably would be dead now because he stopped having sex and the woman he was having sex with had AIDS. And then he brings her into an office one day because she keeps telling him that no one at the office will talk to her. And she he makes everyone in the office shake her hand. And I remember for me when I saw this when I was 16 or 17, when I was convinced that you got AIDS if you even had sex. I didn't think you had to actually, you know, be with someone who had it. I was so scared of it that I remember that thinking, wow, I never thought you couldn't touch or hug, or I was never that ill-informed by my father or elders, but I remember that just being a powerful scene of there has to be compassion for everyone. And I think that was why his films are so accessible, whether they're uncomfortable or not, is because he wants them to be for everyone, even if they're just small moments. As we head into our last 10 minutes before I do my usual final 2-minute wrap up, we have not been able to find Goya's Ghost or a film called A Walk Worth Wild. I've talked to some people. Some have either not heard of it or have just heard that these Milos Forman films are somewhere out there. I don't see them to be able to speak about them. So we have to kind of bring our conversation to 1999's Jim Carrey has Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon, which of course was a true story. Andy Kaufman was a real comedian and was, you know, they had the show Taxi, and within the movie they had the real characters, Judd Hirsch and Mary Lou Henner and Danny DeVito making appearances. And again, Andy Kaufman was in some forms, not to the extreme, was laid out like a Larry Flint, like, does comedy have to be what you say comedy is? Can you just be an act? You can be just as hated, not being lewd, not being sexual, but just being who you are, standing in it, even if you get booed off stage, even if you get fired or voted off of SNL. And Milos Forman, again, I remember when that came out, I did not know the real dislike that Andy Kaufman had for being on Taxi. I did not know the real controversy and the crazy character that he was before I saw that movie. So to me, it was really fresh and new. And where I stood with Jim Carrey was where I think anyone stood at the time, which is he had done Liar Liar, The Majestic, The Cable Guy, The Truman Show. I mean, he was so superb in The Truman Show. That showed you where he was more than just a crazy character on In Living Color. But with Man on the Moon, I'd love to hear your take first, because if memory serves, you're not the biggest fan of Man on the Moon, so that's why I wanted to go with what you think first.
Okay, well, actually being, you know, like, my life at that time isn't history. I was living it. And part of my reaction, I think, was a general reaction. I didn't like Andy Kaufman. He was not somebody that I felt, connected to at the time. So I actually, you know, with a bit of snobbery, refused to see the movie. And then I learned some other things just from people talking from that movie and the trickle down and the awareness that was presented by it. And, you know, I'm sort of embarrassed that, how am I going to give an honest evaluation of a movie if I haven't seen it? But I can give you an honest, what was going on in that time and how, Forman was informing people about a deeper, a subtext of life. And I think that's what made me uncomfortable, and that Andy Kaufman actually in real life made people uncomfortable.
Okay, I see. So it was almost like it definitely was life imitating art and art imitating life. I mean, this film, there was big guff at the time about how there was no Oscar nominations. Jim Carrey won the Golden Globe. So there was a thought that he was going to at least have an Oscar nomination. He was nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award, which usually almost guarantees you an Oscar nomination. And he had won, let's see here, the Boston, the Broadcast Film Critics, you know, different countries had nominated him as Best Actor. And then there was an Oscar nomination, and it was a big guff at the time, especially from Jim Carrey's camp and people. And the thing that I can say about it was, of course, like I said, Andy Kaufman passed away when I was probably 3 or 4 years old. I never liked him. In fact, as a kid, I was kind of scared of him because he talked funny on Taxi, and it was just this weird character. And the movie I went into just as, this is the director of People vs. Larry Flint, because, or Cuckoo's Nest, because at the time, I think all you filmmakers out there, film lovers out there, you have those films that you'll watch anything Meryl Streep's in, or you'll, well, it's like, that's how it is with me and Milos Forman. Anything he makes, I'll watch. So I didn't have to say, well, I'm kind of, I don't really like Andy Kaufman, I never liked him. I'm not a big fan of this actor. Jim Carrey's only done The Truman Show. So all I could do is just say, hey, I'm going to have fun in here. This is Milos Forman. And then for it to hit the things that it does, hit the humanity of death, hit the humanity of the legacy, and whether you liked him or not, the fact that the movie was produced by Danny DeVito, who was on Taxi with Andy Kaufman, and that in the movie, the characters from Taxi played themselves in scenes that were supposed to be of Taxi, showed that they still had a love and respect for their associate, that they came back and did certain things in the movie. The movie had its moments, and of course, Milos Forman, you know, he loves casting Courtney Love. He casts her as Andy Kaufman's girlfriend, etc. Now, the interesting thing that Man on the Moon that I just want to throw out there is great trivia that's just about the film business and the world is that it was never told to me whether or not it was a myth that Andy Kaufman would work at Jerry's Deli on Ventura Boulevard in the Valley on some weekend nights because he wanted to stay in tune with people and audience. And in the movie, there's scenes where Danny DeVito has the great George Shapiro, who would later manage Seinfeld, and would go and visit him, and he'd be busting tables. And people would be like, are you Andy Kaufman? And he'd say, no. And there was this thing where Andy Kaufman said, you know, once you start pulling yourself away from who you're supposed to be entertaining, then you lose your sense. And I think that probably would have been part that happened in some form. But that right there sums up everything we've said today about Milos Forman. And if you remove yourself in any way, you know, then you've lost sense of what it is. This Milos Forman to me is a film director that I feel you could see him tomorrow on a street corner and like, unless he was really going somewhere important or like that, you could just walk up to him and say, hey, Mr. Forman, thank you for your work. And you would not get some get the hell out of my face and bodyguards. And that's the humanity that he lived. Has found the good and the bad and been able to put on film for us and leave for us. And these films are going to be around much longer than any of us will be. And that's what's the beauty of them and the beauty of this filmmaker. There's really, I mean, we could talk about Milos Forman for 3 hours, but as we go into our last 4 minutes here, I just wanted to give you 2 or 3 minutes if you wanted to say anything else or to wrap up your side and your thoughts about Milos Forman.
Actually, it's going to be real short. The thing that I feel informs what he does is awareness. You know, yeah, the stuff that people, you know, like that I wasn't aware of, that I didn't have an understanding of, and I was, you know, presented that and the opportunity to, you know, question. So it's awareness, his awareness, and the soul and the joy that he brings to what he does. That's
yeah,
pretty much
that's
it.
That's a really great way of putting it. I think I was trying to think of how I would sum him up, but I think that's the best summary that you can give him, because his films are so, I mean, Cuckoo's Nest I've seen more than enough times, but People versus Larry Flynt, I would sit down and watch today. I would sit down and watch Man on the Moon again. I would sit down and watch Hair. I know I would constantly find something new. It's sad that he's not making films. I mean, he is 83, but he could be like Akira Kurosawa, who made films into his 90s.
I'd love it if somebody would give him a kick in the butt and have him.
That when I saw that interview I told you about on Netflix, everyone look up on Netflix. They might have pulled it down. There's a series called Hollywood's Best Film Directors. It has Ron Howard, Brett Ratner, Michael Mann, 20 different episodes, but one is Milos Forman, and he lives in this small cabin. Of course, they didn't say where. And he doesn't have his Oscars out or his awards. He paints, and he talks about how he was interested in theater, and he was interested in bringing all the elements together. And he just has this very simple thing, and I mean, talk about a guy, if you were just to be given just a half hour to talk with and just to discuss, never mind the what was Man on the Moon like or what was Cuckoo's Nest like, but just to see what he thinks about the world, or what do you think of this, or what's your take on red wine? He's probably one of the most intriguing people out there, and it shines in the art. So we hope, myself and Jim hope, that you got something out of today, that if any of these films, again, Hair, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Man on the Moon, People versus Larry Flynt, Amadeus, please get your hands on them. Amadeus is on Netflix. Check them out. Even if you haven't seen them yet, tell your friends to check them out. You will find something that you can take away from it, whether it's the beauty or the joy. I usually wrap up the show, but I'm going to say aloha, and I appreciate having Jim on today. And I'm going to say my goodbye right now, and then I'll let Jim say what his last words are for today, his debut episode. He will be on again. We thank Jim as one of our co-producers of Talking Pictures. So with that, Jim, I'm still on air, but the floor is yours to sign us off.
Final thoughts. It's odd. What came up in my mind was it's cinema. And like Amadeus, it was eye candy. Along with what it had to say. And, you know, you and I think of both said he just presents something. But then the cinematography, the people that he surrounds himself with, eye candy in that particular movie. Just, you know, for somebody who's, you know, and a lot of us guys are really, really visually oriented. And a lot of guys might not be, you know, oh, this is about music, opera, and the, you know, and the whole thing, or excuse me, you know, music, period. Indulge yourself, have some fun. That's what film's about. It's about us, our interaction, and what's presented and how it's presented. Cuckoo's Nest, black and white. Beautiful. Appropriate. Awareness. That's it for me. And Paul, thank you so much. Just getting to hang out is fun.
Oh, no, definitely. Thank you. We thank you for that, Jim. And thank you so much, as always, to everyone that joins us. We will be here each week. Yes, come in and out. Film festivals. Tomorrow I'll be out in Hollywood broadcasting live from Dances with Films at the Hollywood and Highland Center in the same building where they hold the Oscars. So we'll see what happens. It's always interesting to be in Hollywood land. Thank you, Jim. And to everyone out there, take care. Have a wonderful day. And like always, whatever you're going to do, just make sure and watch a great movie today.
Aloha. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.